Have you ever felt like you're living life by a script, checking off society's boxes, but still missing a sense of fulfillment? Our guest today reached that exact crossroads and decided it was time for her to redefine success on her own terms. She believes that true success starts with taking radical responsibility for your life and making your own intentional choices that align with your values. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead of the game, because we believe that great leaders aren't born, they're not made, they are constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm a two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. I'm excited to have Kayla Logue joining me today. She's an author, an entrepreneur, and an advocate for personal development, and she recently published a great book called Always Squeezing Lemons. It's a book that will help readers define their own journey of success. Kayla is also the founder of Move Into Words, a nonprofit helping young professionals build healthy mental and physical habits. In our conversation, I asked Kayla to share how to break free from society's expectations to find your own path, taking radical responsibility for your life's direction, and the power of building a community that supports you. In the summer of 2020, you know, you had this perfect life. You were married, you had a couple houses, but then one day you realized that you're unfulfilled and it wasn't exactly what you thought it was supposed to be. So walk us through that story.
Yeah, so it's funny. I feel like almost everything that I do in my life seems impulsive, but I promise it's not. It's one of those things that are very much so thought through. But, you know, in that moment, I really didn't understand how much, like, not clarity I had for so long. And it was a couple monumental times that built up to where I'd say I just completely decided to start over. And it was the summer of 2020, but a couple months prior, I had somebody approach me, kind of ask me what my goals were and, you know, where I wanted to be, not only in my career, but my relationship. And I was like, I have no idea. And really, I was just completely dead in my tracks. And for a personality like mine, that's not how I operate. You know, I'm very organized, I'm structured. And don't get me wrong, I like to go off on a whim and do different things. But it was just, it felt so wrong. And I was like, I need to kind of get some clarity on this. And I realized I had just been coasting and through life and kind of doing everything that I felt I was expected to do rather than asking myself the question of who am I, what do I really want, and who do I want to become, and what is my purpose with all of this? And I had no answers. So, you know, for me, starting over completely was the only option. And so yeah, kind of just blew up my life and I had no direction. I had $900. I was like, I don't know what job I'm going to do. I don't know where I'm going. And in the midst of the pandemic, where we all, I'm sure, have amazing COVID stories, probably not super amazing, but something crazy, I think, happened to every single one of us during that time. It was just such a crazy and also unfortunate time. But yeah, it was kind of just a complete shift.
So give me an example of, you said earlier that you were kind of just doing things that were expected of you. And I think a lot of times, people I come across, even myself, you know, your goals and expectations aren't really even your goals and expectations. They're just what somebody else perceives or thinks you should do. Can you give me an example of something like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would call it pretty much like society's standards, timelines, checking of the societal boxes. And, you know, we grow up being so structured. And I'd say now, you know, as we're evolving, that's changing a little bit. But it was always going to school, right? You're in high school, you're in college. And then after college, you're like, well, what do I do now? You get married, you have kids. And by no means are those wrong boxes to be checking. I know many people that have done that and have very successful and happy careers and relationships. But for me, that wasn't it. And I was, you know, conforming and making sacrifices, or really not sacrifices, more so falling into ultimatums to please others and, you know, in my relationship, but also my career, rather than really following my dreams and the path that I wanted to fulfill. So I kind of put it in more of a metaphorical way rather than, you know, checking society's boxes. I had not understood or didn't learn how to design, create, and check my own boxes. And that's when you're kind of really living the life for yourself. And that's really, through my book, kind of that journey of understanding what that even looked like.
And I think that there's a lot of people out there of all ages, and whether you're in the wrong relationship or you're in the wrong job, you wake up one day maybe and you realize, oh, that's what I'm at, but they don't have the courage or initiative to make that change. First of all, what did that feel like when you realized that, oh my gosh, this isn't where I want to be?
It was, you know, when I first realized it, I was very numb, I think is the best way to put it. It's hard to describe. I think the biggest thing is I felt very stuck. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, I'm already married. I can't do anything about this. Like, I'm in this life. And then I kind of woke up the next day and I was like, wait, no, I'm not. I'm not stuck. Like, I can make the choice to leave if I need to. I can make the choice to find another job. And that just simple kind of mindset shift was very liberating. Now, as crazy as it sounds, you know, having no job, having $900, leaving everything that I've worked for up until that point behind was liberating. It was crazy and seemed, but I was, the day I drove off and committed to starting over and really finding the love within myself was hands down the most freeing, liberating day I've ever experienced.
I think that's awesome. Now, before you did that, did you think about it all? Okay, fast forward a year from now, what the worst case scenario could be or anything like that, or did you just have an impulse and go for it?
I honestly think it was pretty much more impulsive than anything. Don't get me wrong. Over the period of time when I started kind of being like, all right, changes need to be made. It wasn't just like one day I woke up and I was like, I'm out, right? There was a lot of stuff happening in the background for a couple, several months, really. And then finally, I was just like, there's no other option. There is no other option. I think in my mind, I was playing worst case scenarios, but naturally, I knew that would just hold me back more. And when I could kind of just kick that out and be like, just figure it out, trust your gut, you've got this. It's not super practical and kind of crazy. And I promise I'm not that crazy, but it really is one of those things where you just got to trust your intuition and go for it when you know it's not right for you.
Well, I admire you for that, you know, and I think that there's so many people out there, you know, I have friends or people I know in their jobs and they're just like, oh, I'm miserable, but I don't want to go for it. I don't want to try. And, you know, so what advice do you have for those individuals who are, let's say that they're stuck in their comfort zone, right? They know they need to make a change, but what's like the first, at least little step that they can do to get out of that comfort zone and go for, just like you did, going for the life you want to move towards?
Yeah, I mean, obviously every situation is a little bit different, but I think really kind of gaining clarity and the root cause of what's, you know, bothering you and why you're feeling stuck and where that is and what the opposite could look like, right? Like, you obviously, if you're feeling stuck and you're in that place, like, rather than thinking the worst case scenario, what's the best case scenario? And is it worth taking that risk? And if it is, then, I mean, I absolutely always encourage people to do it. And it's not like you've got to start all over. And I write this in my book. I'm like, I'm not saying to like, just say, screw your life, start over, right, leave your husband or wife. I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm writing. I'm just saying when you're in an uncomfortable situation that you know you feel stuck in or suffocated and you know you're at an end, don't hold yourself back because you feel like you're expected to, right? You have to really kind of find the clarity of who you are and what you want and go for it. And it can be small steps. You know, it can just be a simple action daily and those compound over time. But really getting clear on what that really looks like, I think is super, super important.
And maybe we'll just dive into your book. But my question is, how were you able to get clear? I know was it journaling that helped you get clear?
Oh, yeah. 100%. I mean, I even kind of write through this experience and why journaling was so important through chapter 3 in my book. But I've always been an athlete my whole life. We kind of talked about that. So the physical part of, you know, working out was never an issue. Also, I kind of had that athlete mentality. I called it, you know, like rub some dirt on it, suck it up, just push it aside, get over it, which didn't really help when it came down to traumas and processing things. I would just, again, rub some dirt on it, push it aside and not really feel what that was. So I would kind of, when I was going through this, I got into running a lot. And I played softball. We don't run distance, we sprint and that's it. So, you know, like I ran distance for a little bit when I was soccer, when I was a kid, but I was running anywhere from 5 to 12 miles a day, which was super extensive. And I was trying to outrun my thoughts. And so it was just constantly in repeat on my mind. And my sister, I thought journaling was a really dumb idea, truly. I was like, there is no way a long overdue diary and me writing my thoughts down is going to be helpful for any for me or anybody else. And I was very wrong. So when I finally caved into her constantly hinting at me to journal, I remember the first night that I did. Like, I mean, I just word vomited about 10 pages of everything I was feeling. And I remember waking up the next morning and being like, oh my gosh, like, I feel like I just dropped a whole 1,000 pounds of weight off. And then I started to kind of get a little bit more clear on, you know, just intentional with, all right, this is where I'm at. Where do I really want to go? So I feel like kind of that clarity came for me a little bit after I made the abrupt decision to leave, but I knew I had to leave. But that shortly followed my journaling practice. And when I started journaling, that's when doors started opening. That's when clarity started coming. That's when success, as I would define it, started to really unfold.
That's interesting. And did you start that a long time before getting into your book, or were you journaling and then you decided you wanted to turn your journal into a book?
So it's, I would say, kind of collaborative, but also not really. I was a journalism major, so I always enjoyed writing, but I never wanted to write about my thoughts or anything. You know, that was just not, that practice didn't seem practical to me. It was more about facts and things along those lines. And I've always been great with words, writing them down and putting them together. But when I started journaling, I did it consistently enough. And then it was in the summer of 2022 when I wrote down the title, Always Squeezing Lemons. Now, what I thought that book would look like and what it is actually now is very different. But when I decided and committed 3 years later to writing the book, I remember going back and rereading 3 years of journals. And it was crazy how much unfolded from the time when I had no money, I was living like a modern day gypsy, just couch surfing. And I was like, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And it was crazy because 3 years later, everything I wrote down I'd accomplished. So really kind of the manifestations and of course, action, inspired action. It wasn't just I wrote it down and it happened. There was a lot of things that happened in between then, but it was really cool to see how much of an impact that played.
Besides writing a book, what can you give me an example of something that you went back and read and like, oh, that's cool. I almost even forgot that I wrote that down, but I actually did accomplish that.
I wrote one thing, just like small scale. I was like, I want to live in a little house in the water. Well, when I first moved to Lake Norman, that was the first little house that I lived in. It was a little boathouse in the water. And like, that's where I did a lot of, you know, my clarity, my journaling. I wrote that I wanted to make 7 figures before I was 30. And I accomplished that in less than 3 years. And so, you know, just kind of those things that at that time made no sense, really, truly happened. And again, there's, again, a lot of work. I mean, I'm licensed in 4 states. I worked very hard in real estate. I was our top producer when I got there. But I also didn't have any experience in real estate. Like that whole experience of me deciding to move to North Carolina, I was moving to Florida the same week. And then I got offered a job here and it just seemed like a better opportunity. So I took it. You know, so just really kind of like living through things that didn't feel hard. It was hard, but I didn't make it feel hard. I just committed to trusting what felt right.
So let's go. I want to get into real estate in a little bit, but what did inspire you to write your book?
You know, and we kind of discussed this a little bit before we got on the show. I just knew I had a story to share. I had no intentions. I didn't even know like about having a personal brand or, you know, speaking or workshops. Like none of that stuff went to my mind. I was like, I just want to write a book. I've got a story to get out there. I know it can be helpful. I wish I had this book 4 years ago. And that was my whole intention. So it was funny because when I went to the writing workshop, everyone's, you know, they have their business or they have this platform. They're like, why are you writing? And I'm like, I really don't know. I just know what people need to read it.
I love that.
So that's really honestly in the short way, like that's the only way I can be like, this is why I wrote my book.
And so you said Kayla, that what you originally thought you were going to write about, it shifted into something completely different. For me, I kind of felt like the same way. You know, everybody always told me, write a book. You got so many great stories and your family's pretty prolific in San Francisco. And so I originally was going to write my book about my family in San Francisco, but then it completely shifted gears into about what I learned from playing baseball and running my organization, Learn It. So how about you? What did it start with and what did it end up at?
So in terms of like what the book kind of like context was about, was always the same, but the way I wanted to go about writing it completely shifted. So I think actually when I went to the writing workshop is when I had that kind of like light bulb moment, because I went there, I did all the pre-work, like homework, I had my whole outline, and I was like, this is the book I'm writing, this is amazing. And then by the second day, I was like, that is not it. That is totally not it. And what I kind of realized when I did a lot of deep reflection was that I was trying to write the book like the old me. And when I referred to the old me, it was constantly structured, organized, like to a T that, you know, if we had to change dinner plans from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, like screwed the schedule up, right? And it was too much of kind of less vulnerability than needed to be shared in the book. So I completely reworked it and committed to doing, you know, only 12 chapters and letting it just kind of flow, letting what, you know, the main points be made, but being really honest with them, not really, you know, there's a lot of practical takeaways in there, but it's very much so more of personal experiences that can be taken and applied to somebody else's life rather than me kind of trying to sugarcoat it. So it relays kind of a messaging. It's written in a way of a journal, but it's also very much so written in like these stories and experiences that somebody can apply to them.
And so always squeezing lemons. What yes. does that mean to you?
So I love metaphors. I think that they're just the best way to describe a, you know, kind of a hard or more detailed topic in a simple way and really be apply it. But always squeezing lemons. But we know all the lemon metaphors, you know, when life gives you lemons, life will always give you lemons. But always squeezing lemons is life is always going to give you challenges. It's always going to be hardships. There's always going to be setbacks that you're going to have to overcome. So you have to always be squeezing lemons of life. Growth is never ending. You're always going to be in the driver's seat. You're only one that's in control when it comes down to it. And the life you lead, it's your responsibility. And you always have to be squeezing lemons. You don't, you know, unless you want, if you hit one point and you're like, I'm done, well, growth doesn't end. You know, being the leader of your life doesn't end. So that's kind of what the metaphor means.
And I think you talk about this in your book. You mentioned a minute ago about being in control. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think there's a lot of people out there who let the world happen to them, and they have the victim mentality and you know, instead of actually taking control. So yeah. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it's so much easier to blame other people, right? It's easier to point the finger. It's easier to blame things out of our control rather than take the reins and, you know, accept what really is. And I think a lot of the times too, what holds us back is our fear. But fear truly is anxiety of the future, which the future is out of our control as well, right? So it's everything out of our control is usually what causes us to be stressed out or, you know, kind of sit back and don't make any changes and just, again, kind of let life happen to them rather than being in the present, which is what you can control, and really prioritizing where you're at and what's causing, you know, that stress. I think that's the most important thing, is really kind of reflecting and understanding what is in your control and what's causing you to feel like you're just constantly pointing the finger.
Right. And, you know, my mom actually taught me this. She's just like, there's stuff that's out of your control that most likely is never going to happen anyways, that you get so worried about. So why spend so much negative energy on dealing with that? If it happens, then you could deal with it then, but instead be positive, right? And focus on the positive, or take charge of what you do have in your control and move forward with that.
100%. And I think what's also too, it's like our brains naturally are wired like to protect us, right? So we're kind of given like right off the rip a negative perspective, like that's going to hurt me. It's a mechanism to protect us. So it's up to us to really take the situation and turn it into a positive. You know, so it's harder. We all say it, but it's harder to do than it is we're saying. And I understand that. But when you can really be like, the self-awareness level is really important.
Totally. So for our listeners, how can people overcome their fear and deal with their internal challenges?
You know, I think everyone's a little bit different. You know, for me, journaling was really, really important. I think also just prioritizing, you know, where you're at and where you want to go. and really kind of identifying how to get there and making an actionable plan. Because a lot of the times, I think what holds us back with terms of fear is we lack confidence. And a lot of times we lack confidence, we do lack a plan. We don't really know, we don't have the strategy, or we just don't have somebody to help us. We're kind of like stuck there. You know, and depending on the fear and exactly what it is, a lot of the times we are scared of something that we're making up in our mind. You know, that situation is hypothetical, kind of exactly as, you know, which what even your mom said, like it hasn't happened yet. Our fears usually live in future case scenarios. They usually don't unfold. So again, it's kind of going back to that positive narrative of, you know, you're in the driver's seat, you're in control, and you're in control of now, right? You're making up something that could happen in the future, but what's the counter? What else could happen? What's the best case scenario? What's the worst case? And I mean, of course, we have to consider the worst case, but at the same time, you know, if it's worth taking the risk, there's nothing good, nothing great happens in your comfort zone. We 100%. Get really, we get complacent, we start coasting, and we're just chilling. Like, and that's not what this life is meant to live. And I think too, I provide a little bit of a perspective in there, but when we think about death, we actually think more about life. Like the one thing we all have in common is we're all going to die. You know, I mean, we don't want to talk about it, but it's not something to fear. It's something to recognize and think about, like, what if you were to die today, are you happy with what you're doing? You know? So, and I think that's a really important thing, not to just avoid the inevitable. You know, I think it's really important to consider.
And I think, you know, for our listeners, what you should do is do a little self-reflection and think about opportunities that you didn't go for because you were afraid of, or jobs you didn't take, or people you wanted to meet, but you were afraid to do it. And what would you really lose? What did you miss out on by not taking that chance, right? So I think that's so important. But one of the things that you mentioned earlier is that you don't have to do this all by yourself either. So can you share with us, I think you talk a little bit about in your book about how important community is?
Yeah, absolutely. You being a baseball player, you'll appreciate this chapter. It's chapter 11. It's called Know Your Starting Lineup. So I really break it down by, you know, the people. Like for me, I give massive credit to where I'm at, to the people on my team, on my starting lineup. If I didn't have the support system and community that I did, you know, being where I'm at and the positivity that I've had and been able to accomplish would be very challenging. I absolutely acknowledge that. And the starting lineup are the people that, you know, they're the ride or dies. They're the people that love you unconditionally. They're always there. They're the best ones on the roster. The people on your team are the people that, you know, you surround yourself with on a daily basis, whether it's good coworkers, friends, you know, just in your network. And they're good. They just don't always start, right? They're the people that you want there and you enjoy being around, but you're just not necessarily, they're not on your roster. Or not, I'm sorry, they're on your roster, but they're not on your starting lineup. And then you're out means, or you're cut, obviously you're not, you didn't make the team, you're definitely not on the starting roster. And they're the people that put you down. They're the people that, you know, really are kind of negative in your life. And it's really important to distinguish that, because if you don't have that solid community, if you don't have those people that support you, then, you know, it's tough to really get anywhere. It's tough to really, your environment matters. It can hold you back, or it can be one of your greatest assets.
I think that's so important. I mentioned to you, I've got two little kids, and I was fortunate as a kid to be surrounded by, I had great friends, great parents, great friends. And I think that that helped develop over time. And I really want to make sure that they're surrounded by, you know, people with good values and, you know, maybe enjoy sports. And it's so important. But if I'm a listener out there and I'm like, well, you know, I've got some people in my life who are maybe a negative type person and they bring me down more than they help me. Can you share an example of, it doesn't matter who the person is, but like, okay, when you realize, Kayla, that this person's not good for me, how did you address it and get them in the out zone?
Oh, you know, I think our natural instinct, and it depends on the person, right? Because a lot of the times the people that you even have the opportunity to acknowledge, they put you down, or they're, you know, they should be not on your team. You do build a little animosity and frustration, right? Because you're like, wow, you know, I thought you were a good friend, or wow, I thought, you know, we had this connection and, you know, here we are. So it really, I've gone back and forth in certain situations, and I think it's really important to evaluate the situation and the relationship. Sometimes it's just a simple conversation of, you know, hey, we're going different directions. I respect you, and or however you want to handle that. And then sometimes you just let it go. you know, sometimes it's really not worth the energy. And I usually go towards that side because a lot of times I find it's not worth the energy, especially if I'm cutting somebody out and I really don't want them in my space, or it no longer, our friendship or our relationship is not going to prosper or grow any further for reasons that, you know, either you're not supporting me or we're just not on the same page. It's usually not worth the energy, you know, but it's also not worth your energy constantly feeding into them or saying yes when you shouldn't. So it's really just kind of separating yourself.
Yeah, I agree with you. And especially if it gets to a point where you have to argue with them about it, it's like, just move on. You know what I mean? Just cut your losses, sunken costs, just move on and surround yourself with positive people. Can you, so for people out there who need mentors, do you have mentors, and how did you go about finding mentors?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, through the entire process of writing my book, I had a ton of mentors on, you know, different kind of fronts of what they were helping me with. Now I have one that actually was referred to me by my editor, and she was working with me more on kind of helping like develop my main messaging and things like that. But her and I just became really close, and she's amazing. She's also a best-selling author, keynote speaker. She has big businesswoman. But our connection was just awesome. And she's somebody that just helps me really kind of dig deep into getting clear of my message, but also holds me accountable to it. Really checks me on my goals, at my hands in a bunch of different things. And she's like, all right, make sure we're staying on this path. If you're accomplishing this here, I mean, they're so important. And it's crazy how much one little thing, one person more experienced, more wise than you, can make a massive difference in your life. Because otherwise, we're just, you know, spinning our wheels trying to figure it out, reading books, reading things online. But people that have lived the experience, there is nothing more advantageous than people that have lived it, have either succeeded, and they've definitely failed if they were successful, you know. So hearing those real raw experiences and having them really relate it to you, and especially when they care about you and they're there and they want to see you succeed, it's absolutely priceless. So, you know, I absolutely, when it comes down to finding them, ask for referrals. Ask people, you know, if there's somebody that you really respect or admire, ask them. They would probably be honored to want to be your mentor. Everybody that I've asked, you know, that I, even just for me, that I respect and talk to through different things, whether it's financials or just, you know, business related, personal related, they've always been willing to help. And I pay some of mine. And I think that's really important to know, you know, their time's valuable. And if they're willing to help you, paying them's important.
One of the things you said a moment ago is that people have had these experiences, right? Mentors have had these experiences and they've learned from their mistakes. I had a guest on the show named Rick Jordan, and he talked about something called the dummy tax. And what that was really is to him is like, he's found mentors or people who've made these mistakes that he could shortcut that and learn from them. And he does the same thing. You know, he said, and even sometimes from his own experiences, right? He took his company public and it took a pretty long time. And he said, well, now I know how to do this in a much shorter time. That's one instance I learned for myself, but also reaching out to people and saying, hey, how did you go through this? Because why not learn from those mistakes? You don't need to reinvent the wheel all the time, right? And you can learn from that. And what I want our listeners to know is, like Kayla said, just ask people. You know, people want to be helpful and they want to give support. Now, I do think it's important to make it a win-win relationship. So, because it can't just be taking advice from people all the time. What is like one recommendation you'd have for a mentee to make it a reciprocal positive relationship for the mentor?
You know, so even like my mentor now, she very much so picks and chooses who she works with. She's like, I don't work with a lot of people one-on-one. And she's like, the reason I absolutely love working with you and you're probably one of my favorite to work with is because you're very responsive. You do what I ask. You communicate well. You are applying everything that we talk about. You're not just wasting my time either, because when mentors are investing into you, they want to see you succeed. So, you know, if they spend a whole hour with you, and, you know, highly successful people or just people that, you know, are there investing their time into coaching you to be better, if you show up the next week and are like, yeah, I just didn't have time, or, you know, no, or that's just disrespectful, you know? So the respect and showing up and doing the work, I think, is really important, you know, but also offering help, offering, you know, if there's ways, I mean, I'm sure they're either business people or whatever, if there's ways that you can get involved, there's a couple different ways. And of course, paying them, you know, I think that's important. We can't, like you said, just expect advice and time for free. So there's a couple of different ways to go about it, but I think regardless, even if you're paying somebody or, you know, you're asking somebody for their time, respect their time by showing up to your full potential.
I think that's so true. And I, what I recommend as well to people is, if they give you some advice, if you take it or leave it or you don't, but at least text them or send them a note saying, hey, so-and-so, thank you for, you know, for what you told me. Here's how I implemented it. I like that. Like when I give people advice or people that I mentor and they at least follow up, send me a quick email, it just makes you want to help them more. And so
100%.
Yeah. And so it goes back to like what you mentioned earlier. It's about communication, right? You know, communicating. So switching gears, kind of. So your book is 12 chapters, and I think it's broken down into lemon drops, right? Or that's a part of it. Can you give us like, how is the book structured? Because I know you mentioned it's practical and there's takeaways for people. So how's the book structured?
Yeah, so it's 12 chapters. And kind of the introduction introduces it. Obviously, it's called Always Squeezing Lemons. And each chapter is a chapter in the process of lemonade making. So it kind of ties into what the main theme is. And it's a little snippet at the beginning of each chapter. And then it goes right into kind of the experience and the main takeaway from each one. And at the end of each chapter, the key takeaway is the lemon drop. So it summarizes the whole chapter, and then it goes right into the journal prompt. So there's a journal prompt at the end of each chapter. And that's kind of like the main whole portion of the flow, right? So, you know, the beginning of the chapter starts with kind of like my experience where, you know, it was either hurt, heartbreak, success, failure, and really kind of dive into the storytelling of that. The practical takeaway of kind of what I really learned from that experience is summarizes the chapter. And then it goes right into the key takeaway and the journal prompt.
Can you share an example of one of the chapters?
Yeah. So I think I got my book right here.
Oh, there you go. Good. You're prepared, yeah. Kayla.
Prepared.
Yeah.
I'll just start with the first one. So the first one is called Smile for the Camera. And it's really kind of like diving in with like the picture perfect life and how that whole thing unfolded into one chapter. Right. So the experience there. And the end is like the lemon drop, which is, I'm getting to that, is change is uncomfortable. It's supposed to be. If you do not like what you are doing, change it. You do not have to do what you think you're supposed to do. It is okay to follow your own path. Normalize starting over, moving on, and following a completely new path if you feel unfulfilled. You will always be the only pilot of your own life. You should never fear changing directions. A better destination will never be overrated. So that's kind of like the lemon drop. So that kind of really summarizes like the main takeaway. And then the journal prompt, there was like a portion, there's like little subtitles in the book that goes into kind of the experience. And I called it a fuck this, make moves. And that's the moment when I decided it.
Fuck it.
And yeah. So the journal, yeah, the journal prompt
that,
was.
That should be your bumper sticker. Fuck it, make moves.
Fuck it, yeah. So the journal prompt was, when have you had a fuck this, make moves moment? And how did you respond? So it does like a lot of kind of the reflection and takes in, you know, my experience, what I did. Most of them are, you know, failures and how I had to overcome that. Took the setback, turned it into a comeback. And summarizing the lemon drop and then the journal prompt gives you the opportunity to apply it to your own life.
Give us a good failure story, please. Oh.
You know, I mean, really, when it comes down to, you know, the whole society thing, like divorce is a failure. You know, that's 8 years of a marriage that people pretty much just judge you, say you just decided to give up on. You know?
You got married young.
I did. I got married young. I got married when I was 22, and then we split when I was 25. So yeah, we got married very young. We were together for 8 years.
Okay.
And, you know, that alone in terms of there's so many failed other relationships in between, you know, that and then now I'm in a very healthy, happy relationship. But for 4 years, I mean, gosh, my just relationships in general were a failure. And I write a lot about that in my book in terms of not having boundaries. And I didn't even know what those were practically. And I acted in ways that, you know, really went against that and lost a lot of respect for myself for that reason. So, I mean, quite frankly, my entire relationships were failures. So that really kind of like unfolds. And, you know, when it comes down to another more like, I guess, professional one, when in the summer of 2020, I was down working with my uncle just part-time. It was going to be super part-time. And then I forget what happened exactly, but I completely missed like an email and didn't show up to the right place at the right time. And he just like lost his mind and fired me.
Your uncle fired you?
Yes.
What kind of business was it?
It's actually like an Amazon DPS. But it's a small like Amazon like delivery service.
Don't worry about it. If you ask my sisters and brother, they'll tell you I fired them at one time or another all the time at Learn It, you know?
Trust me, we're cool now. It's a whole family of Italians and Polish. Yeah. Like we're a little bit savage. We understand.
I'm Italian too. I get it.
We're a little bit savage and we get it. It's no problem. But I was like, all right, well, now I got to figure something else out. And so, you know, still kind of minimal on money. I was doing some things on the side at this point. I was starting a social media business and I knew that was part time. So it wasn't too big of a shock, but I think he was going through some other things too. I'm like, all right, well, I got to get out of here. And so I'm driving back and then I have COVID. So I had COVID. I had no job. I had barely any money. I remember calling my mom. I was like, Mom, like, what do I do now? And I was kind of laughing.
She's your brother just fired me, Mom. And so
I was like, well, we're going to have to talk to him later. Yeah. But no, it was just, I was like, okay. And then what's crazy though, I mean, I hibernated and, you know, got over COVID, went to a coffee shop the next day. I had another job. I met somebody that, you know, I had a family connection with it was more some mutual connections. He knew the work I was doing with them, the social media and the restaurants locally. And he offered me a job on the spot. So that was kind of cool, you know, but it's just all things happen for reasons.
They do.
You know, so and now I'm here.
Yeah. So before we move on to the real estate stuff, who is the target audience for your book? Can't say everybody, right? You can't say everybody. So if you had to drill down, give me the primary and the secondary for our listeners who should go out and buy your book and why.
So, you know, I would say really in terms of like age range dynamic, like I think young professionals can really benefit from it. If I had this book 4 years ago, even like when I'm, you know, after college or going through college, really kind of trying to get clarity or, you know, coming out of, you know, your youth and really getting into the world and having to fully take care of yourself. If I had this book to really kind of take practical takeaways, absolutely. You know, it'd been awesome. And I also really do think that it can be very beneficial for people that do want a better self-care practice and more self-awareness in general, because there's so much about self-awareness in here. So people that are, again, feeling kind of stuck or people that are just like, oh, I need more in my life. And I don't know what that is. You know, like I'm happy with my family. I love the people around me, but there's just something missing. This is a very good book to really kind of dive into those thoughts because it's intentional. You know, it's my stories and my experiences, but it's written in a way that you can definitely apply to your life. And with the journaling prompts, it requires you to reflect. So I really think if you're kind of in a rut or you're feeling stuck, you know, that in terms of secondary audience, you know, it doesn't really matter what age you are, but if you're in that mindset, that definitely, absolutely, I think is huge.
I think that's great, especially that you have in there like the journal prompts where people can tie back, you know, the learnings that they got from it. And if they really take it seriously, they could do the self-reflection and get value out of it. What is radical responsibility?
So, I mean, it's really in one sentence, it's when you realize you can be the cause, problem, and solution for everything in your life, your world changes. And it's really understanding.
Cause, problem, solution.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you could just say problem and solution, but, you know, I like to make sure that you understand that you can be the cause and the problem.
Yeah.
And ultimately the solution, right?
I think I've been there plenty of times where I did all three.
You know? Oh, for sure. 100%. But the thing is, when you can own that, you're not standing there, as we talked about the victim role, pointing fingers like, oh, well, just because that happened, this is why this happened. Or just because he did this, this is why, you know, this is why I'm here now, right? Like, I mean, it's the same thing. Like when I got a divorce, I could have been like, well, my husband did this, or I decided to quit my job. Oh, well, they didn't do this for me. No. You know, it's owning up to the things that got you to that place in the first place, you know, and not focusing on what is out of your control. And what's out of your control is the way other people choose to respond or the way other people choose to act or what they're doing. The only thing in your control in that moment is what you choose to do and how you choose to respond. And thinking of the past and the mistakes that you've made, if you dwell on them and just you carry them, oh my gosh, it's the worst thing you can do. You know, you've got to forgive yourself. You've got to learn. You've got to move on. And go ahead.
No, no, keep going. Keep going.
Like on the rant about it. No, it's to me, I break it down. I call it the three A's, right? In terms of how to take radical responsibility. And one is individual agency, which is literally at your own will. So doing what you need to do, not based off of societal standards, but what you want to do and identifying that. Accountability. So holding yourself accountable. And not playing the victim role, not playing the blame game. Like, it's up to you. You choose a life you want to lead, your choices, your decisions, your responses. And then authenticity. So being authentic to who you are and, you know, not, again, also making decisions based off what you think you should be doing. It's the highest vibrational frequency in the world. When you're living your authentic life, you attract what you're meant to. And I truly believe that because I now like really understand when things are not meant for me or when I shouldn't be doing something because it's so forced. Like, I'm just like, ugh, like trying to like do it. And I'm like, this is not it, you know? And I'm like, all right, not supposed to do it. And it's not like I just like write things off, right? It's more so it's very intentional, but you can just tell when you're not living in your authentic wavelength. So.
And I think it comes back to what we talked about earlier, touched on a little bit, is self-awareness, you know, just being aware. And it's a good parameter of, you know, like you said, like, or a filter of like, this is authentic, this is where I want to be, or this is not what I want to be. I also think maybe in the same line of this, you talk about self-discipline plus self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Does that fall into that?
Yes, no. And I mean, self-discipline is self-love, you know, like that's, it's respect. It's so important. I mean, you know, discipline, I think, is the one thing that separates the people that are great and like really do make it and what they want to do and the people that don't. Because discipline is showing up on the days when you don't want to and you know, but you still do it. So doing those hard things on the days when you literally don't want to, and maybe you're not at your 100%, maybe you're only at your 50%, but you still give it your 50%. And when you do that, that is self-love, you know, and when you identify what that looks like and you actually do it. There's nobody that like woke up at 5 a.m. and went to a workout and said, I wish I didn't do that. You know?
Yeah.
Getting there is tough, but when you do it, I mean, you feel amazing. And it's the same thing with, you know, when you're pushing towards your goals or you have to have hard conversations or you have to do the dirty work that you don't feel like doing, but you do it and it's done and it's rewarding.
You just feel so much better, right? I mean, you just feel like it's a great accomplishment. So real estate. So you knew nothing about real estate, but you just jumped in, and you've been super successful since. Tell me about how did you even get into real estate, and what about you? What characteristics has been able to make you so successful? I know discipline, but what else?
So my godfather actually approached me about a job.
Your Italian godfather? Like,
yes. No, he's actually not Italian. I'm not related to him. He's my dad's best friend from college.
Okay.
They actually played baseball. My dad's in the Coastal Carolina Hall of Fame for baseball there. So
come on, really?
All baseball players. Yeah.
There you go.
But so they met there. And so he was my godfather. They were best friends. And I hadn't seen him actually since my wedding. And I went to stay with him because I was, again, living kind of like a modern day gypsy. And I was moving down to Florida that week. And I was there for a whole month, though. And the week that I was moving, he was like, I need to take you to lunch. I got something I want to buy you. Offered me the job. And I was like, all right, seems more reasonable. So I like drove down there, had to say thanks and no thanks. I had a whole place lined up. I was moving and I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm moving here now. So literally just dove in, started a real estate school that same week. And I had to get 4 licenses in like a couple months. And it was wild. None of them are reciprocal states. If you know anything about real estate, that's the ideal situation. None of them are reciprocal. All of them had weird rules. So learned a lot about real estate law and what I needed to do.
Right. Stuff that you'll never use, probably.
100%, right? Because what we do is so different. We sell land from the developer, which is nothing like in the same realm. But we have our hands in a bunch of different things. But really overall, like what's made me successful through the whole real estate journey and what's helped me even now in life is I've realized how good I am at communicating with people, mostly because I genuinely care. You know, I'm not just trying to sell you the next thing. I'm not just trying to push this on you. Like, I want you to have the right thing. I want to be there for you. I want to be able to support you. I want to have an authentic conversation. I want to know more about your life. So, you know, just being who I am, but also really being able to, I call it the old school values with new technology. So, you know, the strong eye connection, firm handshake, like right off the bat, really good first impressions. But then also I can write an email really well. You know, I can really follow up. I can stay in touch. So just my communication overall has been really, really good. And also my follow up, like I will follow up with you until you tell me no. Like I will stay on you and I can remember conversations. I can remember what you told me 3 years ago. So, you know, those kind of little like skills have definitely been helpful. And I've been able to really identify strengths and weaknesses through this position, which has been really cool. It's helped me a lot, you know, even through writing this book, through the speaking engagements that I'm doing, through the nonprofit. So yeah, it's been crazy how much it's helped.
What is a weakness that you've identified?
You know, I would say for me, I wasn't much of a hard closer.
Okay.
Starting out.
It surprised me a little bit, but okay. Yeah.
At first I wasn't. And don't get me wrong, now I drill it down. At first I was like, okay, it's all right, you know? And I'm like, but wait, they're just walking all over me. I just wasted my time, you know? And kind of finding like the soft skills I was great at. Like that's just who I am. It was easy for me to pick up. But the hard skills of sales, like I had a hard time identifying with the title of a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
I was
a lot of people do.
Yeah, I was intimidated by it. And I also just felt like it was like, you know, this old sleazy cards. Yeah, I was like, no, that's not who I am. But when I realized it's not what it is at all, but after being in the position, you know, I all I wanted to do is excel and, you know, learn more about even more of like human psychology. And you naturally do it from experience. But now I want to like be able to understand exactly like by definition why. So, you know, kind of diving more into stuff like that. But I would say that was kind of like more of my weakness off the bat, you know, and now it's just like I have my hands in so many different things. It's staying present sometimes. But, you know, and that's just the truth.
I think, you know, for everybody out there who's in sales, it doesn't matter if you're in real estate or if you're in B2B SaaS sales. A couple of things that Kayla just said, which I think is so important, is look people in the eyes, shake their hands when you can. Follow up. I mean, that is so, so important. And, you know, you got to get over the whole stigma that goes around about people who call themselves salespeople or whatever, because at the end of the day, you're trying to help them. And what you said is you really genuinely want to help people. So if you know that that's what you want to do, you should be confident about that. And you should also be confident in what you were just talking about. What you struggled with was closing the deal, right? And I think great salespeople know how to control the sales cycle. They don't lose control of it. They don't let people waste their time. So I think that's awesome, and it doesn't really surprise me that at all that you're persistent and you're successful in sales. So I think that's awesome. And I know we're going to run out of time here pretty soon. I've really enjoyed this, but let's talk a little bit about your nonprofit.
Yeah. So actually the idea for the nonprofit kind of unfolded as I was writing the book. And I have a very entrepreneurial brain. I have my hands in like, so I have a lot of background in different, or I have a lot of experience in different backgrounds. So my brain's always wondering like, oh, do this and that. And so I have a bunch of ideas that, you know, like that's stupid. Definitely not. But this one was like, wait, this is too good to let go. And it really like identifying the problem of, you know, not really having community and opportunities for young professionals to really come together in a growth mindseted environment, right? A lot of the times you're like, go to the bar or go to this club or whatever. And I like, that's not productive for, you know, wanting to grow and do more things. So really what our mission, it's called Move Into Words. It's about cultivating a community for young professionals to thrive. And we do this by really advocating for, you know, mental health habits. We also provide for sustainable physical health habits and really personal growth. And we do this really, the main thing, this has been our first year. We want to do more monthly, but we've been doing quarterly events. And it's about two and a half hours. We do a full workout, whether it's 45 to 50 minutes. We've done yoga, we've done kickboxing, we've done HIIT, you know, kind of just doing a variety, focusing on the movement, right? Some people don't love yoga, some people don't love HIIT, some people just want to walk, but just the importance of moving your body. And then we bring a motivational speaker and we have a specific topic. So kind of bring that together. But the one main thing that bridges the gap together is journaling. So we're kind of focused on, you know, taking one step and scribble at a time, changing a person's life. And our environment, you know, our equation is your environment plus your habits equal your output. So that's really kind of what we're focused on, and being the best version of yourself. Because when you can show up as the best version of yourself and providing those tools, you can be the best version for other people.
I think that's great. Do you have any quick success stories about the community so far, about your nonprofit?
Yeah, I mean, so the events we've had have been amazing. The turnout's been awesome. It's been cool because, of course, you know, we have some friends that are very supportive, myself and my co-founder. But then multiple people have come that, well, we have no idea who they are. And, you know, they're like, oh, my gosh, we've been wanting something like this. This is amazing. And really, our first couple events have been more so proof of concept, implementing feedback and building off of. But now we're really in the position where we're wanting to focus more on the donations, the partnerships, the sponsorships, and really building out and how we can collaborate, you know, in different ways. So we don't want to just stay in Charlotte. We want to be in multiple cities. We want it to be something that really does grow. And it really is a very connective community.
No, I think that's great. And so you've also mentioned off camera that you wanted to get into speaking, do more speaking. What is it you want to focus on your speaking on?
So a lot of it, I mean, there's a couple keynotes, but mostly about kind of taking radical responsibility. So kind of a lot of things that we've discussed today and what that looks like and, you know, checking off your own boxes in life and how to do that. In addition, really about confidence. And how confidence really plays a role in that. So they're kind of two different keynotes. I have two different ones, but focus mostly on being the leader of your own life, you know, because it all starts with you. And the practical ways to really implement that daily, because we're constantly distracted. We've got tons of stuff going on. It's a world where it's easy to start comparing and, you know, being really focused on becoming the best version of ourselves for the world around us is something I'm super passionate about. And everything I talk about, everything I'm doing is very much so focused on being the best leader of your own life.
That's awesome. And it's what I love is that you could see how passionate you are about it, you know, and it could tell that you really care and you're going to be great at it. Do you have anything else you want to leave our audience with?
You know, I think we talked about a lot of wonderful things, but no, I would absolutely love to connect with everybody. You know, so my website really is like where everything's hosted. It's KaylaLogue.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn. You know, any questions, definitely check out my book. I would love to hear your feedback. Leave a review. Yeah, I think that's probably what I got.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, to recap, we talked about everything from making big changes, jumping in and doing, getting out of your, doing things, get out of your comfort zone, radical responsibility, building a community, finding mentors.
Yeah.
All this
stuff, right?
We went all over the place.
Yeah, but I also, you know what? I'll leave with one thing.
Okay.
If you are feeling stuck, or if you feel like you have something else more fulfilling or purposeful in life and you just don't know what it is yet, that's okay. But take steps towards it. You know, identify where you're at and what needs to be removed to figure it out. And I promise you, you will be rewarded heavily.
Well, thank you for helping me out there and tying it all back together.
I think that's like, yeah, I'm like, that might be the best summary.
There you go. All right. So for our audience, if you enjoyed this, or which I know you did, if you know somebody who's stuck, what I want you to do is I want you to, whatever platform you're on, well, first like and review the Learn It All podcast, but I want you to take this episode and I want you to text it to your friend or your family member who's stuck and say, check this out, see what Kayla has to say, go out and get her book, and let's go from there. So thank you, Kayla. You're awesome. And for everybody out there, stay curious and keep learning. Until next time, have a great day.